my favorite audition story monologue. I never had one. I know that we're all supposed to have one. Everyone says you need a comedy and a drama. Have it ready to go. Well, the only time I had something ready to go was something that was totally inappropriate for any audition ever. But I was auditioning for Stanley Kubrick's last film. Eyes Wide Shut. And he wouldn't say, my agent said, well, you're going to audition for Stanley Kubrick. But at this point, they said, we don't know what it is or what it's about. He wouldn't release it to anyone. And so I said, well, what am I supposed to prepare? And they said, well, just a monologue. And I thought, okay, well, if he's not going to tell me what I'm supposed to prepare, then I'm going to give him the weirdest thing he's ever seen in his life. So I did a piece from In the Under Thunderloo, written by Jason Nadler, a friend of mine who wrote this apparently whilst on caffeine at college. And it's this weird, it reads like liner notes to a Bob Dylan album. So for I went in and it goes like this. Fishbone and Eggman silently screaming about God is the way and night is day. Got me tied up in knots, got me swallowing swords, got me all shook up, I'm shot up, bleeding like an apple. Eggbone and Fishman walking on wires, falling on fires, and along comes Sasquatch the man. You know, it just goes on.
Now, this caffeine you're talking about, is this the same caffeine that Eric Clapton sang about?
I think so, yeah.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 273, Audition Glory Stories. Last summer, 2011, it was the last night of our run of Completely Hollywood Abridged at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., and we were just about to open the Complete World of Sports Abridged 2 days later on the Tuesday. So we had a coincidental overlap of RSE actors. We had Matt Croke and Dominic Conti, along with Reed Martin and myself, there in D.C. And so we went out after performance, and as we were eating and drinking afterwards, we got to talking about various auditions we had all had that were glorious in one way or another, either because they were so successful or so dire. So I turned the microphone on so we could share the conversation with you. First off, we started talking about what seems to work for us in different audition situations.
You know what I've had the most success with? Writing my own monologue, naming a title of a fictional play, and then listing a person who, to my knowledge, does not exist.
Yeah.
So they don't, the persons behind the desk don't judge you on your choice. Or even really the work necessarily, but you write for yourself and you do this monologue, and it's been really, things have gone very swimmingly
in fact,
when I've done that.
In
I just
fact,
say, you know, William Brick wrote such and such, and then I do the monologue I like, and then you really, you can write for yourself, you can have a thing, you can make it exactly as you want, and then they can't go, oh no, you know, Glass Menagerie again, you know,
right.
Put out your candles,
I bet
Laura.
They admire you for your esoteric selection. They're like, ooh, I must Google that because I've never heard of it.
They can Google away. They'll never find it.
I was understudying travesties at ACT in San Francisco.
Okay.
And so I had a nighttime commitment. And the Magic Theater called from San Francisco and said, listen, we're doing this show written and directed by Elaine May. Can you come audition for this? I said, well, I'll come, but I'm understudying travesty, so I don't know if I can do it. They said, well, we know the people there, so if you're only understudying, you're in the same city,
right.
I bet we can work this out. So I go on audition, and they hand me these signs, and I go in, and the reaction is fantastic, and I don't know, it's in the dark, so I go, is that Elaine May? Is that
right.
Who's there? And they go, oh, you're fantastic, you know, you just read the thing, and it's funny, and they love it, and then you realize, oh my God, that's Elaine May. And then they worked it out with ACT, so I was actually understudying at ACT, so I had to call in, and then when we were performing in London, I think it might have been before you got there, and we went and auditioned for this thing called Dog Boy, which was on Liquid TV in America on MTV, but you can find it online.
Yeah.
And they called us in to audition for some small part, and I saw a guy auditioning for a televangelist, and that's just a character I kind of do. Right. And I said, could I audition for this? And they said, yeah. And you could just see their eyes light up. You know, and so instead of a tiny part in one episode, I got to be in two or three episodes, and a real good part. So that's hot.
Cool. All right. Well, I've had a couple of good ones. I mean, recently there have been so few television auditions in L.A. recently, and I've been to there is no theater to audition for in L.A. So I haven't been auditioning. So I auditioned for a couple of things, and in the last several things I haven't gotten. But I felt good in the room because they're laughing and they're responding well. They say good things at the end, and it's genuine. You can tell when it's not genuine.
That's what counts. Every audition is an audition for the future.
Exactly.
It might be 2 years later, yeah. You know?
Exactly. So, as far as I go, all I can do is what I do in the room. If they pick me or not, it has nothing to do with that. All I can do is the best I can do in the room. And I walked out of both of those rooms feeling great. You know what? I did really well. My favorite story of where I actually got the job was just a small thing, like a TV movie for TNT. It was about the early live days of television. And Molly Ringwald, Christopher Lloyd, Christina Hendricks from Mad Men was one of the leads on it. It was a backdoor pilot. They shot it as a two-hour movie. But it was a fun idea, and it was produced by John Wells, who produced ER. And it was directed by Paris Barclay, who directed me before on some other TV thing. But I was auditioning to play an actor who's performing a live production, a live on television production of The Doll's House. And, I mean, it's a sad admission about the state of my theatrical education is that I had never read, actually, A Doll's House. So I'm going, oh, who am I playing? What am I doing? Supposed to do? All I knew was that I was a live actor. I mean, I was a theater actor in the early days of live television. So all I knew was that I was going to be somewhat grand.
Ironically, the first play I ever did in college, and I didn't act in high school, was a scene from A Doll's House.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I walk in there, and I wore a fedora, a long trench coat, and a scarf, and I went, my first line was, hello. And the room fell about laughing. Everybody just fell over themselves laughing. I went, all right, I must be doing something right. And I get home, and Dee goes, you motherfucker. You don't even know the play. And I said, but I knew everything else about the play. I knew how to be. And that was where I actually got the part. So that was pretty good.
I have had some of my best auditions. I have not gotten the role. Okay. You know, like, of all time, like, have been, like, that I just did not end up getting the role.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and that's just kind of a weird sort of thing because...
And it happens a lot.
Yeah. Oh, it happens a lot. But you don't hear about that when they talk about it. You know, Esquire, it's like, oh, and he came in and auditioned, and he was, you know, such and such, and made the thing, and what, it's got the role, and whatnot. Like, I've been the number two guy on a couple significant life-changing occasions. But the number two guy, it's like, they love you, but you're number two. They only cast the one dude, you know?
Right.
And it's kind of a tricky, weird thing.
Yeah,
However, let's get sunny for a second, and I'll talk about the time I did get the gig. They read about 100 people for a big play at Steppenwolf, and they were looking and looking and looking, and I got the call that day, you know? So I just came in there and rolled with it and then got the job. It was sweet.
How? What?
And what was the show?
Yeah.
That was Orson Shadow.
Orson Shadow. And why did they like you? Because they liked the cut of your jib, or?
I don't know. It was one of those radical chemistry things or something. Maybe they were looking for the super tall guy. Maybe they were... I think I did a pretty good Irish accent, but I don't think that's what swung it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I just think it was just one of those things. And that's a rare enough thing, too, where it's one of those things. I had a good day reading for it, but maybe if I felt like I had a crap day, I might have got it. It might have been, you know, it might not have mattered, you know?
Well, and you don't like to say names, but who were you working with?
Oh, Austin Pendleton wrote the show.
And how would people know Austin Pendleton?
Oh God, he's the stuttering lawyer in the movie with Marisa Tomei and Joe Pesci.
Oh,
my cousin Vinny.
Oh, he's
Fiddler on the Roof, right?
He was the original model, the tailor, and Fiddler.
Model, the tailor. Yeah,
also in the Muppet movie. He works for Charles Durning. I mean,
he's been in everything.
Yeah.
You've told us he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, you can't be nicer than that human being. Yeah, actually. And David Cromer directed it. He recently won one of those Genius Awards or whatever. So, you know.
Really, the only way to survive as an actor is to audition, do whatever it is you do the best you can, and when you walk out that door, You just don't think about it.
You don't worry.
You don't wonder what could I have done better. You just walk away.
And you move on to the next thing. You focus on the future rather, so you're not sitting around waiting for the phone to ring. Yeah.
Well, and Jane, when I auditioned, it took Jane, my wife, a while to. Oh, have you heard anything? I go, well, I always assume I'm not going to hear anything. I do the audition. I do the best I can, and assume I'm not. And if I do, well, then that's an extra bonus.
Yeah. Well, and the one of the recent auditions I had was for the sequel to the TV movie Fred. Fred is this internet sensation kid, and so they made a movie on Lifetime. And it turns out that a good friend of mine wrote the first movie, and he wrote the second movie, and he got me the audition, not my agents, got me the audition to play the boyfriend of Fred's mother, who was a teacher, and maybe there was something vaguely threatening about him. So I went, okay, all right, I'll go in, and I went, this is a really funny part. I'm never going to get this. It's kind of a third or fourth lead in a TV movie. I'm not going to get this. So I go in there, and I do it, and it's one of those things where everybody laughs in the room. It's like, okay, good. I walk out of there, and he calls me 2 days later, and he said, you know, I just got to tell you, You're right up there. They really like you. You're like the second or third choice on this thing, and you're still in the hunt. I went, wow. And not only was that a nice thing to do, I mean, it was a nice thing to do because we never hear. You either get the job or you hear nothing.
Yeah.
And so to hear that I was at least close was nice, you know? I mean, and it turned out I got, you know, it went to somebody younger and more famous, which is what I thought. Which is where I thought it would go.
Well, and our friend Sandy, who casts for ABC television, she says, and we mentioned this earlier, why you don't get it most of the time has absolutely nothing to do with how good you were, how tall are you, what color are your eyes, what color is your hair, how much do you weigh, who's playing the other part, who do they owe a favor to? I mean, there's a million reasons why you don't get it, having nothing to do with your talent.
What preconceived image in the director's head did you hit fit or not fit?
Yeah, can you live up to that image?
Yeah.
Which is why it's easy to just walk away from it, because it has nothing to do with me. But on the other hand, the complete opposite end of the spectrum was meeting for the very first time, the very first interview for Beyond the Sea, and Kevin Spacey was in the room. Stanley Kubrick never leaves his home, so he didn't even show up.
Right.
They were like, we'll send him the videos.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, fine. That's weird and whatever. But I was so nervous to meet Kevin Spacey. And, like, the last thing I had done the night before was watch Unusual Suspects. And so I was like, oh. And so I was so nervous. And yet, I remember when I knocked on the door, and I heard the casting agent say, come in. And as I opened the door, the first thing I heard was, is that Matt Rippey? Is that Matt Rippey? And it was Kevin Spacey, who's never met me, but he just had a name on a list and was just being nice. Is that Matt Rippey? Is that Matt Rippey? And so I opened the door and immediately felt relaxed.
Yeah.
So I just said, okay, calm down. Rippy's in the house. And then it was just more like a chat. It didn't feel like impress us. Now do it. And I think, isn't that the best way to audition someone?
Yes.
I mean, don't you hate it when someone says, okay, we're here on this side of the table. You're there. Now be brilliant.
Well, that is the best way, and the director or the casting person creates a nice vibe in the room, and that's what we try to do, certainly, but there are times that, boy, by the end of the day, you just go, oh, God, come in and blow our socks off.
Please be good.
Please be
that's
good.
That's what people don't. If you never sat on the other side of the table, you go and you go, oh, they're judging me. We're just wanting everybody to be great.
Deep down, they'd love to you to be good. Yeah, that's true.
I wish every actor in every training program everywhere could sit in on a casting session, so they see what the conversations are, and you see mistakes people make, and you see good things that people do, and you go, oh right, the conversation has nothing to do about he's a good actor, he's not a good actor, it's something else.
Hey, I'm Connor LaStoca from the Citation Needed podcast and RiffTracks.com, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This winter, spring, and summer of 2012, you'll be able to RSC us in 34 cities in the U.S. and the U.K. Cities like Fairfield, Connecticut, Stowe, Vermont, Reston, Virginia, New Bremen, and New Philadelphia, Ohio, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Waverly, Iowa, Tacoma, and Edmonds, Washington, Sonoma, and Santa Rosa, California, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma in May, and then we head over to the UK, to York, Buxton, Exeter, Newbury, Nottingham, Truro, Poole, Tunbridge Wells, Canterbury, Leamington Spa, Derby, Hereford, Rhyl, Barnsley, Salford, Lichfield, Basingstoke, Crawley, Bedford, Tewkesbury, and London. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Reed Martin, Dominic Conti, and Matt Rippey about some of our glorious audition stories. But I wanted to read to you this email that we got from Zach Galvin. The email is titled, I auditioned with the Conti Beat twice. Now, regular listeners of the podcast will know that the Conti Beat refers to the long, lengthy, 2.5-page monologue that Dominic does at the end of Completely Hollywood Abridged, and a monologue that he largely wrote himself. So Zach says, I auditioned with the Conti Beat twice. This may not be as interesting as the title may imply, as both my auditions were for high school productions, but I did audition at both my high schools and our sister school using the Keith Privett monologue from Completely Hollywood. Both auditions were before the release of the Completely Hollywood script was announced. I had to write down and memorize the monologue by listening to the parts of the Conti Beat podcast over and over again. Although I know I didn't do it nearly as well as any kind of actors like you guys can, both groups of people I performed it in front of loved it and the speed at which I did it. It is an absolute blast to do. Also, this summer we did the Bible Abridged and had the audience on the floor almost the entire performance. I thank you for all the laughs and great opportunities you have given me and wish you luck in your future endeavors. Completely yours, Abridged, Zach Galvin. Zach, congratulations. I'm glad that worked so well for you. And I'm glad the podcast helped as well.
The Reduced is a harsh audition. I don't know if you remember your first audition, Dom, but the Reduced is a harsh audition because you basically say, tell us a joke. And how much more can you be put on the spot than just tell us a joke and we hope it's funny? Go. That's hard. Did you tell a joke? And do you remember what you told?
No. Well, Dominic's a special case because we saw you. We saw Dom in a production. But it's not whether the joke is funny. I mean, it helps. But it's really your taste in a joke tells us so much about what kind of guy you are.
Well, we know 98% of the jokes in the world. Yeah. I'm exaggerating. But so what do you pick? But also, do you tell it in a succinct, funny way? Or does it go on? We're sitting here thinking, we know this punchline. You're really drawing this thing out in a not very funny way.
And are you telling it succinctly, or are you acting it? Everybody comes in and has to do the accent and has to pretend that they are the Irish priest in the bar. No, you don't. Just tell the goddamn joke, would you please?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you learn. It's such a window. It's such a Rorschach test of who these people are.
Well, and yeah, so do a comic contemporary monologue. If it's a Shakespeare show, we'll probably ask you to do a little Shakespeare. Tell us a couple of jokes, and then we'll talk to you, because it goes back to the thing about a relaxed atmosphere. When we're trying to narrow it down, we say this all the time. Do we want to spend time with you? There's the 2 hours on stage, and then on tour, there's 22 other hours that we're going to have to deal with you.
Do we want to sit in a restaurant after a show, having beers and food, and telling stories on a podcast, for instance? Just as an example.
Well, now, if that was part of my job description, I might have had to rethink.
All right, so who's got an audition horror story?
Okay. All right. I'll go first. Yeah, this is just, I can't even remember the name of the commercial, but it was for some commercial set in a Chicago casting office, and it was one of those where I don't think it was even overtly comic or whatever, but I felt it started off great. I was there with a girl that I thought was all sarksy as hell, right? We are like, I don't know if we're improvising, but we're doing our lines together. I'm like, man, this is hot. This is awesome. You know, whatever. Like, you know, like, it's just, you know, terrific, you know. And, of course, there's the line of the people, you know, across from literally like those long tables or whatever. I think they're all sitting there or whatever. I didn't even notice them because I thought things were going well with this lady and I, whose name I don't recall except she was excellent and, you know, some redhead. And then I turned and as we were walking out of there, because they're like, okay, thank you. And I felt like I didn't get the kudos that I deserved, you know? So I said, you guys feel the chemistry back there in that audition? You know, I was like, and then silence. Well, did you? And still more silence as I said, okay, see you guys later. And I ran out of there. I guess they didn't like being passive-aggressively asked if my audition was the best they'd ever seen. So I guess in a lot of ways, I made that audition really lousy myself. If I had just left with some dignity, it might have been fine.
Right, right.
Oh, it's leaving without dignity is the hardest thing to do as an actor. On one occasion, I lied. And I said to my agent, I knew how to sing. And so I showed up to an audition for, I guess it was the Buddy Holly story in the West End. And they wanted...
It's Buddy Brilliant.
Buddy Brilliant. Well, I guess I wasn't, because I thought that I could play the drums, the guitar, and could sing. And they asked me to stop. I mean, they just said, stop. Stop. Playing, and the director actually came up and almost placed his hands on my guitar to stop me from strumming. It was that bad, and just said thank you. And I went, oh well. I said no worries. I said I had learned that as an actor, if you smile from the waist up, it doesn't matter what you're doing from the waist down. And he went, not in this show. And I went, oh.
I'm a cop.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I had my comeuppance. And that's hard to do. It's hard to walk out going, okay, you're right. I'm wrong. I'm an idiot. Oh, well. I hope you don't remember my name.
Yes. I'm Matt Rippey. I mean,
don't say that.
I used to be a professional minor league baseball umpire. I one time auditioned to play an umpire on TV, but was not convincing enough.
Oh, no.
I used to be a circus clown. I once auditioned to be a clown on a television show and was not convincing enough.
Wow.
You know, I think that says more about the industry than it does about your talent, Reed Martin.
God bless you, Matt Rippey.
My horror story, and forgive me if I've already told this story on a podcast before, but it was one of the first auditions I had in L.A. It wasn't the first one, because the first one I actually got, but the first one I got was West Wing. That was like my first audition. No, I
the
take
practice.
I lie. Well, the first, yes, you're right. The first audition I had in L.A. was for the practice, and I got that, and that turned into a kind of recurring thing. And then my first audition for my agents was L.A. Doctors, and I got that playing, yes, an L.A. Doctor. But this was an audition for a new show called CSI. And April Webster was...
I have not heard of it.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, it's quite popular amongst people who like shows with CSI in the title.
I see. I think maybe there are many of those.
And I was auditioning for April Webster, and there were two scenes to read. And the first scene was the part of a man who has just found out that his wife has been murdered.
Oh, I remember you telling this.
The second scene is where the guy goes to the police and says, has there been any progress in the investigation? So I read the first scene. And I'm devastated. I'm just devastated because I've just found out that my wife has been murdered. I'm devastated. And April Webster goes, okay, good. That was good. Let's do the second scene. And I read the second scene, and that's when I'm coming to find out whether they have more information about, the murder of my wife. She said, okay, that was good. Let's go back to the first scene again. I just want to give you an adjustment. Let me see. Your wife has been murdered.
Ouch.
And I went, did not nail it then.
And I went, so, I'm sorry, did I not convey that? And if I'd had my wits about me, I'd have said, I'm sorry, clearly I'm wasting your time. And I don't want to waste your time or my time anymore. I'll be gone. Thank you. I was making what I thought was a stoic choice. Sob and be, everybody sobs,
yeah,
right?
That's easy. That's too easy.
It has nothing to do with the fact that I really can't cry on a dime, although I'm getting better as I get older and tireder.
Yeah, and more angry at life.
Yeah.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your audition glory stories via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, casting couch director Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Robbie Venn. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Connor Lestoka. You can actually hear me bringing some Shakespearean affect to Episode 9 of Connor's Citation Needed podcast. And, of course, we're still hoping that we'll get to do a Riff Tracks one of these days. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 273/819 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Am I getting paid for this, Dom? Are you getting paid for this?
Well, you can put your credit card away.
Oh, I could.
Because Reed and I are picking up the...
So in a word, yes.
That should be the highlight of the podcast.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.